You're listening to the Team Flower Podcast, where we talk about flowers and the people who have dedicated their lives to sharing them with the world. We believe that our work with flowers matters, and we're cheering each of you on. If you enjoyed today's episode, would you please help us share it with more flower lovers like you? By taking a moment to leave a rating and review, you're helping us take one step forward in loving the world through flowers. Just head to your listening platform and let us know what these conversations mean to you. Your support is what drives Team Flower forward, and we're so thankful for you. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Team Flower Podcast. I'm Janine, and today I'm chatting with Emma Sherwater. She is the lead designer and the owner of Keep Floral, located in Denman Island, British Columbia. Keep Floral is a full-service design studio and a flower farm. They offer everything from full-service design to elopements to corporate installs and workshops and the occasional farmers market pop-up. Basically, if there are kind people and flowers involved, then you could just sign Emma up. She's going to be there. Currently, they're celebrating the expansion of their farm, which added another 16 50-foot flower beds, which is so exciting, and a hoop house. And they're finalizing the plans to build a brand new studio. So if you want to like follow along with their journey and see all these fun celebrations and expansions, give them a follow on Instagram at keep.floral. Welcome, Emma. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Janine. It's so nice to meet you.
Yes, you too. You too. All right. So let's just, where do we want to start? Why don't we start with what your business looks like now, and then even like how you got to where you are.
That sounds good. Oh my gosh. Well, to start off, like, I'm a huge lover of the podcast. I'm always listening to you guys every week when I'm weeding or spraying compost tea, and you guys are just my go-to podcast. So being able to be on here is like a pinch me moment. So thank you.
That's so kind.
So yeah, a little bit about me and our business. I went to university with the intention of potentially becoming a doctor or a dentist. And so I studied biology and environmental science and really loved like the botany side of things and the environmental side of things. So I pursued a career as an environmental consultant. And as I thought it would be like my dream job, it wasn't. And I took some time off to try to figure out what I wanted to do with my life and ended up in Vancouver and looking on Indeed, which is like a hub for, I think you guys have it in the US, but it's a hub where you could kind of look for jobs. And there was this like junior floral design position. And I was like, you know what, let's try it. And so I started at this flower shop, cleaning buckets, staying up till 2 a.m., cleaning roses. And I kind of had first dabbled in the floral industry in 2015 at this flower shop. And Vancouver market is really expensive to live, especially on your own. So I was working at a flower shop, at an outdoor goods store, at a restaurant. I taught kids how to bike. It was just like this. Doing so many things, just trying to make ends meet. And eventually I met my partner and I was able to work as the florist full time at a flower shop in Vancouver and just fell in love with it and taught workshops and just loved everything about the whole industry. I loved the design and being able to be creative, to teach people about how to design themselves and empower people. And while I was there, a lot of the product that we were getting in was shipped from all over, Holland, Taiwan, you know, the drill, flown. And my favorite part of the week was this one flower farmer who is river and sea. They would bring in the most beautiful flowers to the flower shop I was working at. And it was kind of like a highlight, just seeing what she could grow nearby. And it kind of sparked this idea that I really wanted to create a business that was kind of grown, not flown, and also kind of like a farm to table-esque experience for brides. And so my partner and I looked for land. He works in tech, so he was able to work remote in January 2020. So we started looking around for land so that we could grow flowers. And we were looking around Vancouver, we were looking around Victoria, and we just could not afford anything. And our realtor was like, well, have you gone to the Gulf Islands? And we were like, no. Like, didn't even think about it. And, he, obviously, it's not like your go-to, like growing flowers on an island that's off another island off the west coast of Vancouver.
Right.
It's just something you wouldn't think about doing. And so he took us to Denman Island and we went to this property. And it was just, it just was this moment where we both kind of got shivers. And it's this 10-acre property, a forested property on a lake, and we were able to buy it within our budget, and we were able to clear land, build our home during COVID, and start our little flower farm. Wow. So that's how Keep came to be.
Man, oh, yeah. What a story. That is so beautiful. And I, gosh, it has been, I mean, it's hard to believe that it's been over two years since everything just like completely shut down. But it has been so encouraging to hear how many positives and successes have come out of that time frame, like that one COVID year where everything shut down and then everyone was like, okay, now what do we do? You guys went out and you bought land and built your house and a flower farm. Like, that's so awesome.
Thank you, Janine. We're very, very lucky. And it was definitely not something we had planned to do because we were looking for land before. Like in January, where we had bought the property, it was like COVID was on the news and like we kind of had heard about it. But the day that we moved with our U-Haul from New Westminster to Vancouver, it was the first day of lockdown. So we were like on the ferries with our U-Haul and there's no one else on the ferry.
Oh my gosh.
It was so eerie. And we showed up and we were like, all right, this is it. Like dead mice in the cabin. And we're like, what?
Oh my gosh.
We do?
I know. It sounds like the makings of like a horror movie or something.
100%. My partner's like, what are we doing?
Oh, well, I'm glad it didn't turn out that way.
No. Yeah. We're so lucky, like very privileged, very, very lucky. So
could you maybe talk about some of the, in that first year of flower farming, some of the obstacles or hardships that you faced and how you overcame them?
Yeah, great question. Well, I mean, you probably know flower farming, like I took the floret farming course and Erin, who is amazing, she makes it look like she's been doing this for a long time and she's so good at what she does. And so I was like, I'm going to be like Erin and it's going to be so great. And, you know, it's going to be so easy. And I think in my mind, I had romanticized what farming would be. And like, don't get me wrong, I'm like a hard worker. Like when I have my mind set to something, I'm going to do it. So I like was ready to take on any challenge. And we built our house and we started the farm. And so we cleared about an acre of land and we built, in our first year, we built 16 50-foot beds just by good old moving wheelbarrows of dirt and compost, making raised beds with a bunch of friends and family. So that first year was last year. And I don't know if you know, like in BC, there was a heat dome. So we had,
maybe describe what that is for those who don't know.
Yeah. It's just like, just a crazy heat wave came over our community in BC and, we had temperatures of like high 30s. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but like super, super hot, in July, hotter on record than ever before.
Wow.
And so we had just put up our deer fence in like late May. So I was just kind of scrambling to get little seedlings in the ground in June. And then after a couple of weeks, we got this insane amount of heat. And I could not keep up watering, and a lot of things died, especially because our compost was quite dark. And so a lot of things were being burnt, like the seeds were being burnt. So my first year, I was like, oh, this is farming. This is really hard and nothing's growing. So this year now, in our second year, it's been really cold. It's like,
oh boy, it's the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. And everything's like green and lush, but there's no flowers.
So oh my gosh.
It's been interesting, but my gosh, I pinch myself every day being like, this is my life. It's just so great. And I love being able to adapt to the climate and being able to like really see if I can do it.
Yeah. Well, maybe next year it'll like even out and you'll have experience with all of it, like the hot, the cold. And oh, that's really cool. Has there been a flower that has kind of blown your mind at how hard it is to grow?
Yeah, Lysianthus. I mean,
I
heard rumors and I was like, well, second year, I'm going to build a hoop house just for my Lysianthus. And so I started seeds in January, and they're literally like maybe 5 inches, and I started the seeds in January. And so many have died, but you know what, some of them are growing. We have a 50-foot bed in our hoop house, and I would say maybe like a half are still living their best life. So those ones, definitely a test of patience for those ones, but I know it'll be worth it.
That's great. You know, it actually, I think you're the second or third grower who has said that Lysianthus is like the bane of their existence, like they're still trying to figure it out. That's really fun. Okay, so what about like all of the seeds and bulbs and tubers that you use to grow your flowers? Where do you get them from? Where do you source them?
Yeah, good question. I mean, the first year I went to Florette and just obviously loved all of her seeds and her colors. But then this year, I really tried to stay as local as possible on Denman Island. So our island has about 1,000 people, and it's minimum plot size of land you can have is about 10 acres. So it's very far, like not that many people. And very community oriented. So it feels like I kind of stepped back in time like 50 years and ended up on this like really great community island. And they have this really cute thing that every year it's like a seed exchange. So people bring all their seeds to this old schoolhouse and they donate seeds that they have too much of, and then they take what they need. So it's this big seed exchange. And I walked in and people were like, oh, Emma, there's like the flower table over here. So I just spent like hours looking at all the flowers that these people had donated, and some of them are like ones I'd never seen before, like heirloom varieties from like hundreds of years ago. So I got a lot of seeds from there, especially like a lot of my sweet pea varieties, which are really beautiful. And then of course I love supporting other flower farmers. Like there's a great flower farmer, Hazel Bloom, and she's nearby, and there's a couple other like Pacific Floral, and then of course I go to West Coast Seeds and Johnny's and stuff. And then try to get my tubers and dahlias also from like local farmers, as well as like Canadian companies, like Van Noort and Brex and stuff like that.
And another pro to finding these locally is that you know that they're going to grow well in your area because they've been grown well in your area. So
absolutely,
that's awesome.
I know, it's so funny. I ordered like from Europe or something, and like they did not grow, and I was like, why did they not grow? But it kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
you have to get West Coast adapted seeds to be able to grow in this climate. So
right, that is a really good tip for anyone who's new to flower farming.
Yeah.
Pay attention to where you are and where you're getting your seeds from. Okay, can we maybe talk about, because you have a lot going on with your business, like lots of things that you do, so how do you decide, how have you and how do you decide what to take on and what to say no to. And then we can move into maybe if you even have an off season, like what that looks like.
Yeah, good question. So at this point, I'm just kind of building my business. So it is our second year kind of taking on weddings and clients, and being on a small island, you're really trying to figure out what is profitable and who your market is.
Sure.
I love big full-scale design for weddings, and that's like brings me so much joy. So I'm trying to find as many clients who are passionate about like a farm to table experience, who want to invest in my business and who believe in me and believe in my design and believe in trying to reduce all the transportation of flowers coming from all over the world. So at this moment, I'm really trying not to say no to anything, but I'm definitely noticing this year with a couple clients, knowing that, okay, that's a red flag for next time, you know, making sure that setting those expectations or really talking to people about what I provide and making sure that they know what they're getting.
Sure.
Like I can't promise peonies in September and I can't promise these things because I really do want to use what's growing and what's in season in BC or in my farm for those weddings for that time. So trying to find the correct client is where I'm at right now. And I mean, if someone comes to me with a very floral heavy, peony heavy thing in September, I do have to let them know, like, well, this is, tell them, educate them a little bit on what I do. And if they're still set on that, then trying to help them find the right florist for them.
Sure.
So, I mean, I have been featured in like the BC magazine and through my friend's company, Anyan. And I think through those two experiences, I'm starting to get some clients and brides who are, coming to me for that reason, to know that they want to support a flower farmer who has a design background, who will give you the full service experience, where if you book in advance, you can come to the farm and see where your flowers are growing, see what you like, and then I can do a mock-up with you at the farm. Kind of, yeah, just like the most important thing is finding clients that believe in that sustainability and local and supporting small businesses in this area of like Vancouver Island and the Gulf Islands.
That's so, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I really love that. I really love that. And I think that I know that there is a market for that, you know, and I'm appreciate that you take the time to educate your clients and recognize if they're not a good fit for you and you're not a good fit for them, and you just send them to someone else, like another flower friend. I think that that's one thing that's so wonderful about the floral industry.
Agreed. And I think it's something that I'm noticing with the small group of florists in the area is like, if we get someone who's shopping around, then we'll be like, hey, like, did you get this inquiry? And I'd be like, you know what, this one's probably not for me. So I think this is more your style, you know, you take this one on, you know, or I've had that where friends are like, hey, this is really whimsical and wild and very, they want lots of native BC species. And this is maybe more your up your alley. And it's a really cool community that kind of support each other and know like what we all kind of individually really like taking on. So it's really cool having a community like that out here too.
Yes, absolutely. What a gift, right?
Yes, it's amazing.
How do you think, like on a larger scale, how do you think floral professionals can support one another better?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I feel like we're doing a really good job thus far, but I feel like we can even go further to, I mean, one thing I've noticed, I've been freelancing for a couple florists around Vancouver Island this past season on the weekends that I don't have weddings, and getting to see their process and them also being completely transparent with their pricing and how they send proposals and just helping each other out. Like I was helping a farmer or a friend last weekend, and she had this incredible proposal made on Canva, and I was like blown away at the art, like the art that she sends these brides. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. I'm gonna do that. And, you know, like talking about pricing, like being able to say, hey, this is how much I charge, and let's all have the same minimums and prices, so that when a bride comes to you, it's like they're coming to you for you. They're coming to you for mm-hmm. your style, for what they want to support your business, versus mm-hmm. coming to you because you're the cheapest. You know?
Yes. So ooh, think, yeah, that's really yeah, good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's also, it's hard, like farming, and I've definitely noticed, like, especially in rural communities, like farming and growing flowers isn't always it's not necessarily a career, it's a hobby. So you see people selling market bouquets on the side of the road for like $8, and it's hard to compete with some of that. And not that right. I'm competitive with that, I just, those aren't my clients. And I think some rural farmers who are selling at such a cheap price point, I want to like shake them and be like, sell that for 4 times the price and they'll pay, because yeah. they like love you, you know, and they would come to you no matter what.
Right.
So I think making like kind of advocating for those flower farmers, being like, you can make so much more and your prices should be increased, because you should be competitive with the wholesale prices, because wholesale prices are outrageous right now. So if you increase mm-hmm. yours a little bit, you can make a little bit more for your family and to support yourself. So yeah, that was a tangent, but I just want to.
No, I feel like we've hit a passion point of yours talking yeah. about, yeah, talking about the pricing of things. Yeah. How do you determine what to price your, like how to price your flowers and include, you know, the intense labor that you put into it and the time and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's something so new to me, and I'm trying to figure out how much to price things out, especially if I'm selling to flower friends who are needing a bunch of like sweet peas or whatnot. I ultimately do go to wholesale price lists. So I'll look at how much things are being charged at the flower market in Burnaby, so outside of Vancouver, and I'll see, okay, this is how much locally grown sweet peas are being charged at the wholesaler. And I will be, if not similar, I'll be a little bit more than that. Because I do think that it's important to take into consideration that these are grown as organic as possible and sustainable on a small farm. So I try to meet the wholesale costs, if not a little bit higher than that. And then, because it's my second year, so I don't really know how many hours I've put in or how much, you know, stuff like that. So it's hard to find that algorithm to price, but I do look at wholesale price lists and kind of compare to that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I've never heard anyone mention that before, but it totally makes sense. And and even like, you know, even though it's your second year, like, you know, your farm and you know these flowers and you know, like if one particular flower maybe takes a little bit more time or a little bit more compost or fertilizer or whatever, then you can know, like, yes, this is one that I can charge a little bit more for than the wholesale price because I know what all has gone into it. So that's a good tip too for those who are starting out as flower farmers and kind of in the same boat as you. Like, what do I charge for these flowers that I'm growing? Yeah, look at the wholesale list.
Yeah. And also growing flowers that, you know, like coming from a design background into a farming like business, knowing what's like really desirable and like knowing people love ranunculus and peonies and roses and lisianthus. And so growing those ones that, you know, you can charge a premium for, but then you can also include in your floral design to kind of set yourself apart from some farms that are growing primarily just annuals.
Really good tip. Has there been a flower that you have grown that you were like, oh, I definitely didn't grow enough of this?
Oh yeah. There's this thing called Sweet Sultan. Do you know
it? I don't think so. I'm about to Google it.
Oh my gosh. I like struggled to find the seeds this year because I feel like it's just the coolest thing. It's like those fluffy dandelions meets like a zinnia. It's like this fluffy white ball and it's cute.
Yeah.
I grew a little last year. I had maybe like 5 feet of it and it was like a powerhouse. Like it would just keep going from like the beginning of the season till the end. And like, I could not find seeds. I found seeds on this small island in Salt Spring and I bought as many as I could off Etsy and they're still growing, but that flower, if you can access it or get your hands on it, get all of it because it's the best.
Oh my goodness. Okay. These little flowers are so precious. I've never seen one of these in person before.
Yeah.
Wow. I love it. It does. They're it looks like a fluffier dandelion.
Yes. That's yes. Awesome. The best flower ever.
Is it pretty hardy too?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hardy. The stems are so long and like, they're just, I mean, I've seen them now in floral design. Like you see some like big florist using it and you're like, oh, that's the one, you know, it's going to blow up. I believe it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
The next pompous grass. The sweet sultan.
All right. Heard it here first, you guys. Sweet sultan. If you're not growing it, you better.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fun. Okay. Well, what about your favorite flowers? Do you have like a top five? Because yes. I know it's hard to pick one. So
I know. I think I'm a lover of anything daisy shape. So I love like the ditch mm-hmm. daisies and the single varieties of dahlias, especially dahlias that you start from seed. You get such cool coloring.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, sweet sultan, number one. I love sweet peas because they remind me of my grandma and I just love that scent. And then I think the last one that I really love and I grew for the first time this year were some like, I don't know if they're like heritage varieties, but like the really unique coloring of the pansies and the violas
mm-hmm.
that are like, they are blowing my mind too. Like the stem length is so long and they last so long. And I'm going to do a 50-foot row next year because I'm just like putting them on cakes and cookies and drying them. I just love them. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I have come to really, really love pansies. Oh man.
Yeah.
There are so many lovely varieties.
So many.
Okay. One more question for you before we wrap up. I'm just going to give you the mic to just, I don't know if you have a word of encouragement for people who are maybe in the same season of you as you, or who are thinking about starting a flower farm, like what would you say to them?
Oh my gosh. I think one bit of advice as I blabber. I was freelancing for a florist down in San Francisco. Her name's Vanessa. She owns Unwritten Florals and she is like my go-to. I just love her and I think she's just incredible at what she does. And I was down there and she told me, she said, Emma, don't, like, you should be pricing higher because you're growing flowers. And she said, don't price lower in compared to wholesale, price higher. Like people want to support you and they want to believe in what you're doing. And I think that's probably the take home message for me is like those people who are growing flowers, like what you're doing is like really important. And I think it needs to happen more. So price yourself price yourself higher, like know that people are supporting you and want to like support your business. And, you know, I think the right clients will come, but make sure that you're pricing appropriately to be competitive and to get those clients that like really are passionate about a home, like a grow not flown model and like a farm to table situation for their wedding and their event. So I think, you know, price higher, everyone. Farmers, especially.
Price higher.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supply and demand, right? There is a demand for locally grown flowers. And so let's build up the supply. Let's do it.
It's not easy. You know, it's not easy to grow flowers. And if you're doing it, then know that it's like, it's worth so much. And people are just dying for homegrown flowers for their wedding. So I think just, it's such a special thing. And I'm so lucky to be able to do it, for sure.
Man, thank you so much for the words of encouragement that you've shared and the advice that you've shared, and just like your transparency and just being real with where you are and all of it. It's just, has been such a wonderful conversation with you, Emma. And I'm sure that I can speak for our listeners and saying the same thing. So thanks for sharing your heart with us today.
Thank you so much. You guys are amazing. And I, like I said, I like love you, and I'm so, so honored to be able to be on this platform and share my experience on a little Gulf island in BC.
Yes. Well, I can assure you the pleasure is ours. And if you're listening, keep in mind what Emma has said. Definitely, like, if you're dreaming about doing this, do it, go for it. There is a need. And flower farmers and designers and shop owners alike, pay attention to your pricing and your market. It's important work that you're doing, and people love flowers and they're going to buy them. So keep it up. You're doing a great job. And just remember, if you ever feel alone, that you're not. You've got all of us here at Team Flower cheering you on. To all of you out there, thanks for listening. Your work with flowers matters. Here at Team Flower, we are cheering you on as you deliver light and grace and love the world through flowers one bloom at a time. Thank you for listening to the Team Flower Podcast.